When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Chip Tamman football, that's what Pittsburgh does. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. So close to the draft, 2024, first round Thursday night. As always, I'm Brian Batko with you from the Post-Gazette, and pleased to have on today author of Round Zero Inside the NFL Draft. His name's Andy Phillips. He's also a former player himself, spent part of the 2015 camp and preseason with the Packers, but he's really well versed in a lot of this process, and I know fans have so many questions about it this time of year. So it's going to be great to talk to Andy on this show, brought to you as always by Pella. No better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella windows and doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Let's get to it. All right, there he is, Andy Phillips. And the guy basically wrote the book on the draft, Round Zero. You can find it anywhere books are sold. And he also does some contributing writing to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a former O-lineman himself at Western Michigan, right? Or was it Central Michigan?
Central Michigan.
Central Michigan. My bad. I get the chuckle. The Steelers draft so many MAC guys up here that they all start to run together a little bit. But what's going on, Andy?
Nothing, man. I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited to talk draft. Yeah, I wouldn't say I wrote the book in the draft by any means, but I think it's definitely a inside look at the stuff that we don't always get to see because of the angles and the stories. And I appreciate you having me on to talk about it this time of year.
Absolutely. As somebody who's, studied it, what kind of jumps out to you, general impressions of the Steelers over the years? I can't imagine there are many franchises who have, literally had a lot of the same philosophies for decades, going all the way back to the 1974 draft, which a lot of people consider maybe the best ever, produced four Hall of Famers, and it's the 50-year anniversary of that as well. I know you've got some Bill Cowher insight in your book. What can you kind of tell us about those anecdotes and things that you found through your research and that people might be able to read if they pick it up?
Yeah, so for starters with the Steelers, there's not a single franchise I think that has a bigger niche than the Steelers when it comes to three positions. They've always drafted receivers in the mid rounds well. They've always got their center right, and they always seem to, whenever they want to go after an edge rusher, no matter what the round is, it seems to work out. And that's kind of been their philosophy my entire life, going back to the mid-90s when Coach Cowher was really getting rolling there. And I think it all starts with their process. They have great ownership that allows their coaches and their front office, they have very defined roles in this entire process. And talking to Coach Cowher, I was fascinated to hear, being a coach, being a head coach specifically of a great organization, how much trust does he have in the scouting department during the season? Because the goal of the truly great franchises are your head coach and your coaching staff is not getting involved in the draft process until February. When you think about it, if you have the top pick like Chicago, by the time that their season ended, they had their exit meetings with their players, exit meetings with maybe some coaches. They're getting rolling on the draft just after the new year for the most part, whereas the good teams, the Kansas Cities, the Steelers when Coach Cowher was there and some of the Mike Tomlin era, you're not really getting going until end of January, early February on the draft. And the combine's right, 2 weeks later? So understanding how Coach Cowher's process was, I found fascinating. You got to trust the scouts. You got to trust the general manager, because how he would typically run it was after the season, he would have a week of exit meetings and self-scout and stuff like that to wrap up the season. He would follow that up with understanding that he has about 2 weeks until the NFL combine to get to know the guys. And he would want to get a 10-play highlight, maybe five great plays, five bad plays, of everyone that he can meet at the combine. Because he didn't want to walk into one of the interviews and not have really any idea about the player. both good and bad, both because he wanted to have the questions intact. I found that fascinating because you have to have a level of trust. Now, I found it really funny is, you know, he'd give every one of his, you know, coaches and assignments throughout the process as well about a prospect. So your offensive line coach would get an assignment to you know, put together another template clip, five good, five bad. And he did find it funny. You know, he could always tell when a coach didn't really like the prospect because it seemed that 5-5 split didn't seem to be 5-5.
The highs weren't so high and the lows were pretty low, I'm guessing.
Exactly. And hey, why do I have 8 bad clips here and 2 good? But that's the funny part about the process. But he had to have trust. Now, Coach Cower, though, he needed to meet with the guy. He wanted to make sure, as a coach, I'm coaching the player. You need to do your process as a scouting department, but I need to make sure I can coach the guy. I need to make sure personality-wise I can coach him. And one of his philosophy was he wanted players that he had to reel back. He was okay going over the edge. It was his job to get the team ready where they might go a little over the edge on game day, and he'd much rather have to pull them back than try and get them going. And that was a very specific philosophy when he was meeting with these players. He highlighted Hines Ward. He highlighted Antoine Randle L. as just guys that were Steelers, guys that were football players that he knew on game day, on practice, there'd be no issues ramping them up. If anything, we'd have to reel them back. And you look at the players over the years, the James Harrisons, the Joey Porters, that, you know, no matter what, if they're drafting or acquiring, they have a specific player in mind. It seems to carry over. Now, I did find it very intriguing about Coach Cower in the college coaches. Because I asked him, I was like, you've been around. How much trust do you put in the opinion of their college coach? And he did say you have to take it with a grain of salt because at the end of the day, most coaches talk up their guy. Because I always imagined if a coach is always talking about his players, at some point their opinion is going to be diluted because not every one of their players can possibly turn out in the NFL.
Right, and he wants to make his own development in coaching look good. I mean, you want to churn those guys out to help your own program.
Yes, anytime you can have a social media post that you had 7 players drafted or you had 4 players on the all-pro teams and all that kind of stuff, it's recruiting, it's a pitch. He always found that the coaches he had the most trust in were the ones that had an NFL background, whether it be as a player or as a coach, because there isn't more of an understanding of the business nature of it. He recalled hiring a college coach to his staff before and it not working out because the drastic differences in how you can coach an NFL player and how you can coach a college player. You're dealing with adults and you have to have an understanding. So he always found when it came to the draft process, you know, there's a little more trust in the Nick Sabans of the world, not always because they have the best recruits, but because Nick Saban spent a lot of time in the NFL as a coordinator in Cleveland or obviously as a head coach in Miami. So I found that part interesting as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you kind of know the personalities that you're dealing with at the pro level, too, if you've been there. I want to zoom out for a second, Andy. When you look at everything that goes into these, what I guess, 4 months, as you alluded to, from the time the season ends till, you know, Thursday night this year, what's the most overrated part of this process and the most unsung part of this process? What, you know, between pro days, showcase games, combine, the tape itself, the stats, the visits, is there anything that sticks out to you as we make too big a deal of this following the draft and not a big enough deal of this?
Yeah, so I want to hit this in a couple areas. I think overrated in the general consensus is some of the combine drills. You know, the combine was really created for a place to gather all the top prospects to get medicals on them. And then it turned into a showcase. I don't see that there was a lot of value when the people I talked to, whether it be Bill Polian, whether it be, Steve Mariucci, Bill Cower, none of them really leaned into and told me how much they value the combine. They enjoyed the interviews. They enjoyed getting to know the players. The medicals had to check out. But at the end of the day, none of them were like gung-ho on the combine is everything, right? And now we treat it like it is. And I love it too. I'm just as guilty of watching Anthony Richardson last year at the combine and being like, oh, I better go back and check the tape. What did I miss? Type thing. The other thing is more on draft day. And Bill Polian had the great line that he says he often uses when he does a speaking event, but he told me for the book as well, is the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner. We all love it. It's cinema, right?
But he said, I might have to watch it in the next 48 hours here. Yeah.
Get you ready. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he said the only thing that's even remotely true about that movie is all the bad food you actually eat on draft weekend. He says everything else is just fabricated. He says there's no yelling and banging on tables. There's no screaming. And he goes, at the end of the day, if there's any disagreements, if there's any, say, elevated conversation, it's handled in the weeks and months leading up to the draft, because come draft weekend, you want silence and you just want to trust your board. You've already went over every scenario and every, you know, hey, if these are our three guys when it gets to us at 20 and they're all gone, we understand we're trying to call to get the trade down. And at the end of the day, the other part I found fascinating, and this is more the overrated part as the draft gets going, is Bill Pullian explained what a reach really is. And it's not what the media wants you to think it is. You know, when Daniel Jones went, what, sixth overall 4 or 5 years ago, everyone said, oh, that was a reach because Mel Kiper had him ranked 12th or Daniel Jeremiah had him ranked 18th. So they reached by taking him at six. That's not a reach in the eyes of an NFL organization. NFL organizations grade their players. If you have a first round, you know, top end first round grade on a guy, if you have a first round grade on this guy, he's a blue check prospect. If you give him a red grade, that's all that matters. If you view the guy, it doesn't matter if he was selected eight slots higher than the big board on the ticker says on ESPN, right? And I think that's fascinating as well, because I think we often, the Monday morning quarterbacks of the NFL draft, not a shot at Albert Breer. He's fantastic. I'm not talking about him.
We all have to get our grades out, you know, by Thursday.
Yeah, exactly. And often we'll look at that and say, well, this guy we probably could have got at 22. Okay, but you have number 11. What are you going to do? And it's often those scenarios I find post-draft when Bill Pullian said that. I'm like, that's a great point, because that's often the topic the next day is you took player X in spot Y, and it was just higher than anyone had mock drafted him before. So I found that to be fascinating as well.
Yeah.
Shout out to Albert Breer, who's fantastic. I just used his Monday morning quarterback as a reference.
I got you. It's funny, you know, I figured you might mention the combine. And, you know, one of the reasons that even sparked me having you on this week was a loyal reader of ours, Ed. Ed, if you're watching this, here's your question. It's getting to Andy now.
Shout out, Ed.
He was like, Brian, this might be silly, but I wonder this every year at draft time. Why do they not run the 40, and I guess by extension all the other drills, in pads? Wouldn't that be a better way to gauge speed? And I guess it's one of those things that's just like, that's how it's always done, and yet I didn't have a great answer for him.
No, I don't have one either. It'd be fascinating to have pads on during the drills for throwing, receiving, 40. If you're a ball carrier, put a ball in their hand during the 40. All those things, it makes so much more sense. But it's just, at this point, it's so much of an event. You're not going to change that.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, there's records being chased. Literally this year, Xavier Worthy running 4.21. If you stop doing that and you put him in pads and Xavier Worthy runs a 4.48, how is the public going to react to that? I mean, it's just, I would love if they could throw pads on at least during the position drills.
Yeah,
I found it.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, listen, I'm not a Johnny Manziel fan with how he's kind of, you know, handled his process. But one thing I found very smart was that his pro day at Texas A&M, he wore shoulder pads and a helmet. And I thought that makes sense. Show them, because it's a completely different game. When you watch Tom Brady for all those years training at his hidden locations, whether it's on a beach or in Montana or wherever he trains, he always had his Patriots helmet on and shoulder pads with no jersey. But why get used to throwing any other way when that's not what you're going to do? So, Ed, that's a great idea. Unfortunately, I think we're way too deep into the combine that they would ever do that. I mean, heck, guys are not running it now to begin with, some of the top prospects. If you tell them that they have to run with pads, you're not going to get them that way either.
Yeah. They would change that. It would no longer be the most ballyhooed track and field event on earth. And, you know, it is interesting. You are seeing fewer and fewer players doing those testing. You're seeing fewer and fewer coaches and decision makers even going to Indy now for it, because you can follow it remotely so easily.
Sean McVay he's kind of been the innovator of the new school of head coaches, and he's kind of the one that stopped playing almost every starter in preseason, and he's the one that he hasn't gone to the combine in years. And I think there's just a new way of looking at it with a lot of these things. And then players, I think the NIL has put these kids in the position of power earlier in their life, and they understand business decisions more. And I think you're going to see that affect what these guys do pre-draft. You saw Marvin Harrison and Caleb Williams and what they decided not to do, even including medicals, which is the first that we can remember. I think a lot of that's because they had power since they were coming out of high school business-wise. And I think they understand business decisions maybe more than anyone else and understand the power that's in their hands. For good or for bad, it is what it is.
Yeah, one more in the weeds draft question, and then I've got to get like a Steelers draft prediction from you for this year, because I've got a good feeling it'll be in your O-line wheelhouse. But, you mentioned like the combines, the pro days. Mike Tomlin is somebody who still loves that grind. I mean, he goes to a lot of those pro days. He's at the combine every year. But the thing I wanted to ask you about was these pre-draft visits. What have you found out about – because that's another reader question I always get, Brian. What actually goes on there? Is this a meeting that could have been an email, or more accurate in 2024, a Zoom call? Or is there still a very significant piece of making the sausage that goes into those now?
I think the pre-draft visits, like your 30 visits that we're talking about, I think those are huge, because you have to – kind of what Bill Cowher was saying about, he's got to coach the player. Let me know what makes the player tick. Let me know if he's a guy that I know can give me his all and can, you know, work with me. I think that's more what those visits are about than anything. I don't think it has anything to do with anything other than what is this person's personality? What's their drive? Let's spend some time around them. Is he likable? And you hear more than ever when they're, you know, the Bears picking up Caleb Williams and taking him out to dinner. Well, they're going to bring some of their leaders on the team with them. They want to see how he interacts with the team. I think it's that. And I think what Washington did, bring in, what, four quarterbacks on the same visit, it's like, who's the alpha? Right. And there's certain positions you want a certain personality trait at, and there's ways that you have to try and see that and test that out. I know lots of Washington's getting a lot of heat in the media about doing that, but it's one of the oldest tricks in the book. You know, I'm pretty sure San Francisco's done that, and Washington's new GM, Adam Peters, came from San Fran. And it's not the it's not to insult a potential number two pick. And if you're getting insulted by that, well, look in the mirror a little bit and understand that they have to make a business decision and invest multi-million dollars into somebody with that second pick. They want to make sure they're getting the right guy. Sometimes it's not about being the loudest one in the room. It could be the one who's reserved and sits back and observes. I mean, you don't know what they're looking for, but it depends on the coach. It depends on their philosophy and what they need at that moment in the locker room, because not every team needs the quarterback to come in and be the face and be the leader. Sometimes you just need him to come in and fit into what you do. It just depends. So I think that's more of a personality driven thing and understanding. Is he going to fit our culture? And is he going to fit our staff?
Yeah, I know a lot of
times I find it important.
Yeah, the Steelers are bringing guys with medical questions too, of course. And, you know, maybe dudes that they didn't get to see in person and do that meeting process that you mentioned on the road, sure, or pro days or.
And I did find this interesting, and this is one quick anecdote about my book too. Steve Mariucci, when he was a quarterback coach in Green Bay during the prime Brett Favre years, they didn't need a quarterback, but every year they made him go out and go to tons of quarterbacks and go meet with them at their schools and go do this and that. But it was for two reasons. It's, they're probably going to draft one late round. Great. However, you're getting this personality trait. You're getting this connection. You're understanding the person's why. You're understanding what makes them tick. You're figuring all these things out now, because guess what? In 4 years, when they could be a free agent, you already understand the guy a little bit. You understand what makes him tick. It's almost like you're scouting for the future, and you can never get too much information on a player, because you might not get him in April this year, but you might get him in March in 4 years. And so having a little bit of insight is going to be, Bill Belichick was famous with Brady. It always seemed like he was meeting with some top quarterbacks. Hey, he's getting intel for the fall when he has to face them. And I think you can use these visits for more than just this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You use it for scouting reports, and you use it for potential free agents down the road.
Absolutely. And the Steelers and Justin Fields, hooking up this offseason is great example of that. Who could have seen that coming back in 2021 when he came out? So, all right, Andy, what do you have for us this year? Who's a Steelers fit that jumps off the page to you? They got Broderick Jones last year, traded up a few spots to get him.
Yeah.
We'll see if he continues to stay at right tackle. If they move him to left, it might depend on who they take and who they take with their first round pick right now, 20th overall, unless Omar Khan does some wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, and they're not a huge trade-up franchise. I mean, last time they really made the leap was Devin Bush, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
So it's not in their philosophy typically to move up. My guess is O-line is the preference. I think if you're looking at, let's say, offensive tackle, guard, like one of those swing positions, not center guard. I think Amarius Mims out of Georgia could be the guy that's still sitting there, but he's the guy that lacks the experience of the other tackles, the Fuagas, the Alts, Fashanu. Mims is the one, C.J. Latham, and then Fontanu out of Washington. Those are kind of, in my opinion, the ones who I could not see being there at 20, depending how the board falls. The only way I think one of those guys gets to 20 is if we see the run on six quarterbacks somehow go before that. Then maybe one of those guys with the more experience falls into the Steelers' lap and they run the card there. If not, I think you're looking at this. You're looking at, do we take Mims, who is a human bank safe, walking through the doors, a little less experience, needs a little bit more coaching, but have the understanding that you're pairing him with his former teammate, Broderick Jones. They understand each other, coming from arguably the best program in the country, and we're going to turn this bank safe into a mauler fast. He has good film. He has some inconsistencies. The film is good, though. The power and the athleticism is unmatched in this draft when you look at the full size, but he's going to need a little bit more coaching. But the Steelers showed they had no problem doing that because they took their time with Broderick too. However, if he's gone or they really want to get back to the roots that we talked about in the beginning, the center position, they'll probably have their choice. You're looking at Jackson Powers Johnson, in my opinion, being the best one out of Oregon. Big, powerful, 330-pound center, and moves well at that size, but he's an absolute tank. Reminds you of Creed Humphrey in Kansas City. He locked down the center for a decade in Pittsburgh. I do think the one that's closer to home, and if we see anything about the Steelers, they like MAC players who are, for the most part, in their backyard. They like going to kind of that route a little bit more. They drafted Pickett, obviously, who is not just in their backyard. He was in their kitchen. The one other center that I think you can maybe look at from a personality standpoint that fits the Steelers is Zach Frazier out of West Virginia, who's just a stud. Now, in measurables, he's very average. I mean, hell, he looks like me in my office right now. But he has some great tape. Throwing the Penn State game week one last year, and he was probably the best player on the field, and they have a lot of guys going on. So I think he could be the one that I don't think they need to get him at 20. I think that's probably the one they trade down for. But again, I think Mims and Jackson Powers Johnson would be the most likely candidates at number 20. I know a lot of people say they could go receiver there. Steelers' nature is never going round one at receiver because they're so good at finding and developing in the mid rounds. There's no point in going receiver right there. You can get the next Deontay Johnson where you got Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, I'm with you. Real quick, Graham Barton do anything for you at center? Yes. I mean, that the transition's not easy. We've seen that.
No, but he's played it, though, which helps. Yeah. Now, I think I'd feel more comfortable with him as a round one guy if his latest reps were at center.
Yeah.
Because that's probably where he transitions to. I've experienced it. Like Graham, I played 5 games at center in college. It was my first 5 games I ever played. And then I played the next 37 at guard. And, 38 at guard. But then when I get to Green Bay, they brought me in pretty much as a center. And it was really like riding a bike. So I do think Graham probably has the same experience where he can probably get back into it pretty fast, get through OTAs, get through minicamp, getting back to your technique. And then by training camp, you're pretty much ready to roll. I do see him probably being around one guy because he kind of fits the Steelers, but he really fits Dallas to me. Because Dallas, in my opinion, is known for grabbing an offensive lineman and just telling him, basically, you're playing where we need you. We're not opening up a spot for you. Zach Martin, great tackle at Notre Dame, going to be a Hall of Fame guard. You look at what they've done with Tyler Smith. You look at some of those guys they bring in. Their philosophy is we're going to put the best five out there every single week, which means you might be playing multiple positions. I think Graham Barton really fits what they do. So if he gets past the Steelers, that's kind of where I have him penciled into. Because I think the Steelers are looking at and going, if we can get the best center, and in my opinion, that's Jackson Powers Johnson, I think they will lean him at 20. If they want to trade down or trade back up, I think Zach Frazier's in play. And I think you always got to watch out for tackle. If they had a good experience in-house with Broderick Jones, I think Mims is very well on the table as well.
Absolutely. Darnell Washington there as well, also a Georgia Bulldog who blocks more than he runs routes at tight end. So
yeah, it's basically another old lineman.
For sure. Andy, thanks so much, man. Really enjoyed this conversation. Before I get you out of here, if you want to let people know where they can find you, where they can find your work, and we'll call it a day.
Yeah. So you can get me on any social medias, you know, Twitter, TikTok, whatever, at aphil66, A-P-H-I-L-66. You can get my book, Round Zero, Inside the NFL Draft, wherever you get books. Amazon's always the easiest, but you can go to Target, Barnes & Noble, you name it. And yeah, follow me around. I'll be shooting out draft content during the draft. I have my top 50 board out right now. I am I'm not chalk. I'm not niche. I do it all based on my film analysis. Not too worried about what the public thinks of it, to be honest with you. And we go from there.
Sounds good. Well, for Andy Phillips, I'm Brian Batko. Thanks, as always, for checking us out here on the Chipped Hammond Football Show from the Post-Gazette. We know there's so many options, especially come this week with the draft coming up. But keep it here with the PG. We'll have plenty more shows for you. I'll be back Wednesday with Chris Carter on the North Shore Drive. And then we've got the big live show Thursday night at Mike's Beer Bar. Make sure you get down to the North Shore to check that out. Thanks again, Andy. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.